Alan Adcock. This recording is part of the oral history project carried out by the Suffolk Horse Society in 2013 with advice from the Cambridge Community Heritage and a generous grant from the Heritage Lotteries Fund. In the recording, you will hear the voice of Mr. Alan Adcock describing his memories of the Suffolk Punch Heavy Horse. Alan is a retired farm worker. The recording was made by Peter Webb, who is a member of the Suffolk Horse Society. The date of the recording was the 18th of February 2013, and it was carried out at his home in Ford End, Essex. The duration of the recording is about 33 minutes.
Oh, well, thank you, Alan. Well, sir, if I just have you, what was your name, sir, and your date of birth, really?
Alan Adcock. Date of birth was the 5th of April 1937.
Oh. Where were you born?
East Burghold, just on the borders, just into Suffolk, but only by about, three quarters of a mile, I suppose.
What sort of family were you born to? Were they ordinary people, working people, farm people, or what?
No farming in my family at all. My dad was a gardener on a big estate, about parkland and big kitchen gardens, rose gardens and all that sort of stuff. He was head gardener. Although he started there as a boy, he started there as a 12-year-old boy. He left school at 12 and went to work there because he could read and write. They let him leave school in 1918. he'd been there all his life.
They were very valued people. Head gardeners were valued people, weren't they?
He'd worked his way up, but during the wartime, he was away. He got called up and he went to India and Burma and whatever. He went away when I was three. So I didn't really remember him. And then, because he was away for 5 years, I didn't really know him when he come back.
That's quite a common story, isn't it? With soldiers and sailors.
Called him uncle for ages because I couldn't get used to calling him dad, but there you go.
So what, you were born and then what was your first job then, Alan?
I went to school in East Burghold, which was just a village, the ordinary village school, which took you from 5 to 15. I left school just before I was 15, actually, because I was 15 in the Easter holidays and you could leave school then. I went to work in East Burghold for a man called Mr. Harris. It was about 300 acres, but mainly a lot of vegetables, a lot of pigs, very intensive sort of farm, really, lightish land. We had irrigation in those days, which was quite unusual, really, in 1952. Loads and loads of pigs.
So it was a mixed farm, arable and livestock?
We had three, I remember it as clear as anything, we had three petrol paraffin little grey Fergusons, and we had three horses, and, that's where I started with the horses, really, and that you had to do everything with a horse before they'd even let you get near a tractor. So I had, 2 years messing about with horses, really.
So you were just on the time where tractors were taking over the horses,
Really.
So there's horses on your farm.
Yeah.
You was a young boy.
Yeah. So, and there was still a head horseman. Because three horses, and most of the work with the horses was carting off sugar beet, with tumbles, carting out the manure from all the yards, and especially I remember was horse hoeing four rows at a time on the sugar beet. Right. I mean, they drilled the sugar beet with a Smythe drill. Just on the flat. And we used to grow quite a lot of sugar beet, and they were hoed, horse hoed four rows at a time, and because you had to have a boy leading the horse, which was me, and the horseman behind the steerage hoe, so you just keeping it in, making sure you didn't cut the sugar beet up. Another job that I done you had a horse and one harrow, and when we were digging potatoes, you were always growing early potatoes, mainly for the Clacton and Walton market, which was the early potatoes, Aaron Pilot, and but then they one row at a time, and the ladies picked them, you know, picked them up, and then you had to go around with a horse and a harrow to make sure, you know, you uncovered anything
you hadn't missed any,
and they would pick them up again before the next row was dug out. So it was again a boy's job to.
Yes,
you know, with a horse and one harrow with a handle on, just to lift it up when it get full of tops and whatnot.
So that was the women's. A lot of women did that voluntarily for extra money, didn't they?
Oh yeah, they done. Yeah, they worked part time. Yeah. We used to grow a lot of Brussels sprouts as well. I mean, it was a very intensive sort of farm. Yeah. Not much cereals. One there was. We used to grow a lot of Brussels sprouts, and again, they were all. We'd mark the field out with a Smythe drill. And you marked it out both ways, so you've got four coulters in the drill, and you mark everywhere where you marked it one way, and then you marked it the other, and where it crossed, where the marks crossed, you planted a Brussels sprout. So it was about 2 foot 6 apart, you know.
Yes.
And you planted the Brussels sprout all by hand.
Yes.
You know, all by hand, so you know, dibbed in.
Yes.
And the women used to pick the Brussels sprouts. Yeah. You know, very few of the men picked the Brussels sprouts, but.
Those dibbers, were they the long dibbers with a handle on the end?
We all made our own dibbers with a metal point on it.
Metal point,
if you're working piecework all day, you need a good pointed dibber. And
you only get paid for what you do, don't you?
Yeah, and the boss used to come along, get hold of the leaf, and if he, you know, if the leaf didn't break, if he could pull the plant out.
Yeah. Well, Alan, sorry about the interruption there. Horses, just not every farm had, you know, thoroughbred, if you like, heavy horses, the Suffolk Punches or the Clydesdales or the Shires. Most farms had just heavy horses. Can you remember what the horses were? Did they have a specific breed, or were they just crosses?
Yeah.
What were they?
Yeah. Well, we had one Suffolk, one pure Suffolk. We also had a crossbred, or a heavy horse, but that we got some Shire in it. The Suffolk was a mare. I'm trying to remember what the other one was, but and we had the three. What used to annoy me sometimes as a boy was when we were horsehowing, we used to stop at dinner time and they used to change the horse, you know, because it was a bit hard work. But I used to moan because I was the boy, but they never changed the boy. I still had to go do a walk and get my feet stood on, because turn around at the end and making sure you got in the right row when you've got four rows at a time. You know, and I wasn't very tall. I'd be holding the horse up here, and I've got my foot stood on many a time turning around.
What was your working day? What time did you start?
Oh, we started at 7. And we had an hour for dinner, because a lot of the men lived in the village and would nip home.
Oh.
You all cycled, you know, just cycled to work.
Yeah.
And then we finished at 5, and then you worked Saturday mornings from 7 till 12.
Right.
What I do remember as well is we got paid a shilling, in those days, a shilling an hour, so we got £2.08 for 48 hours, which wasn't, by the time I paid my mother, that wasn't an awful lot left.
So who actually looked after the horses, feed
Head horseman. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, as a lad, you had to help. You know, you had to groom them before, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And I also remember, you know, you used to walk them in the pond to drink.
Yeah.
And you were always told never to let the top rein off, because if you let the top rein off, someone would kneel down and roll in the water, you know. So you kept that top rein on, and poor old horse would keep trying to get the top, you know, let you do it. But they had to take them in and drink, you know. And then walk them back in the stable. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did they breed horses on the farm?
No, they never bred them on the farm. And I expect really they still had the three all the time. I was only there for 2 years, but they still had the three, and they still used them all the time, because, you know, the tractors were only just coming in, and the machinery, a lot of the machinery was still horse machinery.
Yes.
You know, I mean the Smythe drill. The rake for raking up, you know, for all sorts of jobs,
was
horse. Yes, I mean, all the carts, you know, the carts were still, you know, you couldn't convert all of them.
No.
But one of the tales I better tell you really was one I did get into problem was 1953 at the coronation. We were asked, my boss obviously was asked, would he supply you know, two horse and carts, and they were the big carts for, you know, carting sheaves on.
Right.
And the big four-wheel wagons would be supplied two of those for pageant, you know, for tableaus in the village, you know, do for the coronation. We were asked, I was asked to take one of the, you know, and the head horseman, Crafty Old Devil, he took the sort of best horse, I suppose, the quieter one, and he left me with the Suffolk mare, and we got to the field, and all the different organisations, that was the scouts, the guides, the Women's Institute, the church choir, they all had a separate trailer, yes, or tractor, yes, to, you know, to put their pageant on.
So yeah, you were really and truly, you know, the last of the horsemen. You saw the horsemen going into history, didn't you, really?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, how many years was it that had horses on the farm that you worked with? It must have been a very few years before they went.
Oh, yeah, I think within a year or two,
yeah,
they'd gone, you
yes,
know.
Yeah.
I mean, they changed the diesel Ferguson came out.
That's better.
And yeah, you know, bigger tractors and one thing. And hydraulic machinery came out, things changed entirely, you know.
Saved a lot of work for you, didn't it?
Yeah,
lifting,
yeah,
and, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we were still thrashing, thrashing the corn with a thrashing machine in the field.
Well, yeah.
There weren't many combines about in the early 50s.
No.
So they used to bring a big thrashing tackle right into the field, and you'd cart several fields, you know, close to that. You'd cart and thrash them at harvest time, straight.
Yes.
You know, that'd all be in sheaves, stooped in the field, and then you would just cart it, put it straight in the thrashing drum, and because I wanted some money at harvest time,
yes,
and then the rest would be, you know, stacked.
Yes, yes.
The rest of the fields would be stacked, and then
what power does thrashing drum? What power does?
Oh, that was then. I mean, the early. I remember the steam engines in the late 1940s. You know, on the farm, coming to the farm, steam engine came in and loved it. I used to go and, you know, kill the mice and the rats and whatever. But yeah, that was my real start to farming, really. But then the tractor came in with you know, belt pulley, you know, drive, and the biggish old tractor drive, and the thrashing tackle there.
Yeah, field marshal, those sort of big
old
tractors.
Yeah, and the what's name baler, stationary baler.
Oh, yeah.
Because we used to, that was wire tied, you know, wire tied bales, which were jolly handy for building pig shelters. We used to use no end of,
yes,
you know, wire tied bales, built pig shelters with them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because there was no, I mean, there weren't no building blocks and anything much.
No.
It was difficult in those
after
days.
After the war, you
yeah,
see.
Yeah.
And because they were tied with wire, the mice wouldn't eat the string.
No, strings.
And they'd be pretty permanent, wouldn't they?
Yeah, well, there was no polythene string then anyway. It was only ordinary string, you know. The old baler twine sort of stuff, you know.
Yeah. So you actually worked a thrashing drum, did you?
Worked on it, yeah.
So
yeah,
were you taking all the chaff away?
Yeah, for a start. And then later on, I certainly remember carrying sacks of corn and, you know, that was pretty. But anyway, we went talking back to the coronation.
Yeah,
sure. We got to the field on. We were told to go on the Friday afternoon. I think, well, I say Friday. It was the day before the coronation. I think coronation day was Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever it was. But the day before, we went for rehearsal, and we got on this field called the Victory Meadow in East Burghall, and I had the Women's Institute come to get on. You know, quite a lot of ladies, mainly quite elderly ladies, some of them. And they all had steps, and they climbed onto this big four-wheel wagon. And then all the others were lining up with tractors and trailers and horses and whatever. And all of a sudden, a chap called Tom Gaylor, who lived in the village, put some music on, and the horse bolted. I mean, the mare just couldn't hold it. It just went. Well, the ladies on this thing were, I mean, some of them were very well. I wouldn't say none of them got injured. Some of them did, because some of them fell off.
Did they?
Yeah, some of them fell off because this horse just went crazy. Went down the field, and they were there. And I was 16, I think. And I mean, these ladies in the village used to see me in church and all things. They still blame me, you know. But I mean, it was old Tom Gaylor putting the music on. The horse had never had. So on the next day for the actual coronation pageant, we never used the horses.
Right.
We changed them for tractors.
You put a tractor on them.
You know,
yes.
They thought it'd be nice to have a horse.
Yes.
You know, but that was too dangerous.
Yes.
Really.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So, yeah.
People think horses are you know, they are tractors. They're not, they're God's creatures.
Yeah, well, it was just, you know, I mean, it never heard loud music. He got loud speakers and it never heard the, you know.
So after you, you got the tractors gradually coming on the farm.
Yeah.
How did the horsemen take to the tractors? How did you take to a tractor?
Well, I was, I was younger, so I took to the tractor pretty easy, really, because some of the horsemen didn't. They used to shout "Whoa!" and, you know, end up in the hedge. That often happened. I mean, you know, they found the older men, and some of the older ones would never, you know. I mean, I can remember older chaps on the farm just would not drive. Yeah. You know, they wouldn't drive a tractor.
Yeah.
No, some of them, old George White and one or two others, I can remember, they didn't take to the. In fact, our head horseman, he'd left. He wouldn't drive a tractor. And the younger chaps, you know, the sort of, you know, the 20s and 30 year olds, they took to the tractor. And even, you know, some, and even some in the 40s and 50s, but the older men just really didn't take to them.
No. Do you know what happened to the horses? Do you know what happened, or they did just
taken off? I don't know whether they were auctioned or taken away for slaughter. I have no idea what happened, really. I didn't think. But I went to, when I was still only 16 and a bit, well, I was 16 and a half, I suppose, I got managed to get to a farm institute called Chadacre, which was a. You know, it's closed now, but it was a 600-acre farm out near Beresnemans, a place called Hartest. And Lord Ivor had given the farm and the great big hall, that was a mansion of a place, for the education of the boys on the farm.
Right.
And evidently, Lord Ivor, in the 1920s, he'd found a lad on the farm at Eldon, binding a horse's foot up with a sack and cow dung. You know, because the horse was lame, and the boy had been told that the cow dung would draw the, you know, the pus out of the foot.
Yeah.
You know, would heat up like a poultice, really.
Yeah.
And Lord Ivor evidently thought there must be better ways of educating, you know, farm boys, and because he was head of Guinness family, and he bought the 600-acre farm, and the great big mansion of a place, and he gave it for the education of boys, you know, like myself, really, and farmers' sons. And they used to take 25 boys for 2 years. You lived in, and you had to do everything. And we still had a lot of horses at Chadacre when I went in 1953. I went there in September 53, and they still had, we had five, if not six, you know, horses all the time. And while we were there, our principal, it was a man called Mr. Seaward, he was also looking out for horses for other farm institutes. And I do remember at one time we had 17. I remember we had 17 horses. He was just stabling them for a short time and feeding them before they went off to other places. Sort of thing. But they were all Suffolks.
Were they? Yeah, yes.
Because they're, you know, the clean feet.
Yes.
And heavy old, I mean, very heavy land at Hartest. I mean, they, you know, you couldn't use anything else. Yeah. You know, Minnamshire or anything would have just balled the foot up. You would have been totally
got grease and different
been
yes.
at all, yeah, you know, yeah. Sort of.
So did you actually were trained to use horses a little bit
there? Yeah. We were still using, all the boys had to you know, harness up and you know, clean, groom, and we feed everything. You had to do everything. I mean, that was more early mornings. You'd be up at 5, you got all, you know, you got called out at 5, and you had to go to work until 9. Came back for breakfast, and then you had lectures from 9 till 12, and then you were back again after lunch, back on the farm again, sort of thing. Yeah.
That was advanced, wasn't it? Very advanced
training. Yeah, it was. Very good. Brilliant training,
goodness
really.
Me.
Yeah, I mean, we had veterinary lectures.
Did
we had, you know, had red poll cows, which they were, you know, we were milking red poll cows, pigs, chickens. You had to do everything. Your butter making. Yeah, the whole gambit, really.
Yeah.
But you were there for two long winters, and during the summer, because a lot of them were farmers' sons, during the summer, from sort of the end of April up till the beginning of September, you were, all the boys went home to the farm, you know, if they had to help in harvest.
Yeah, yeah.
Or in my case, they found me a job on 3,000 acres in Yorkshire, on a big farm up there, and you know, sort of thing, on Southburn Estates. So, you know, I went to Yorkshire to work for that. Period, you know. But
did you get a certificate or
anything? Oh yes, yeah, I got a certificate in agriculture and machinery, we had machinery lectures and a lot, so we got the, you know, Sydney and Guild in machinery.
Did you really?
As well,
yes.
Sort of thing, yeah.
And that's in 1950s?
Yeah, 1950s. Yeah, 1953. Yeah. I was there from 1953 till 1955.
Yeah.
And then I'd only been home a few months after from... I came home in at the end of April in 55 and went back to Mr. Harris to work there, you know, where I had been as a boy. And in the September, I got my call up for national service. So I went in the army for 2 years, and I drove Centurion tanks. So I had a wonderful time.
Yes, yes.
You know, I drove. Well, I learnt to drive Land Rovers and then lorries, and and then I was driving 55-ton tanks, which were quite interesting, different from getting behind a horse. Yeah.
So what was that story with Fison?
Well, with Fison, I mean, I was invited to go and make an advert for Fison's fertilizer, and the people who were making the advert, you know, filming it, and that they came to the farm at Ongar, where I was managing about 500 acres there. And while we were, you know, talking and thinking, the aeroplane went over, and they said, "Well, this is no good. You know, we'll find a better site where we don't get any interruption from aeroplanes and traffic noise and whatnot." So we had to go to Woburn Abbey to make this advert for Fison's, and it was a very cold day. And what's strange about these things, they have a professional asking you questions, like might be you. You see, you know, have this professional who is an actor. He's got an equity card, and so he's allowed to talk to you, and he can ask you questions. What they can't do is they can't pay you because you're not a member of equity, and they also can't give you script. They can't give you script. It's got to be your own words. And so they have two or three takes. You know, they try and take, well, you can't remember exactly the words you used the first time. So, you know, they keep doing it over and over. But the particular advert that several other farmers made the, you know, done the same thing, but the one I made was chosen to advertise Fison's fertilizer. And it was, I think it was only because I said fertilizer in a better way than they probably said fertilizer.
That's it, Suffolk way for fertilizer.
Yeah.
So you're a star, are you?
Well, I know about that, but I was just checking all my notes with. Yeah.
What happened to all the tack and all the harness that all got
sold off? Yeah, I mean, it made nothing, did it? Now if you go to an auction and there's some brasses and horse brasses and all that sort of thing,
it's sad, wasn't it?
Sad. It makes money now, but it got thrown away, a lot of it. And one of the funny stories, really, that from Chadacre, and people from Suffolk will be interested in this. Our shepherd at the time at Chadacre was a chap called Richard Seabrook. Now, Richard Seabrook became quite a well-known figure. He was a well-known shepherd, and he used to shear no end of sheep. He learned to shear on the Bowen method, which was a New Zealand chap who came over and taught a lot of our chaps how to shear sheep quickly. And Richard was quite a youngish man. He got several young lads and he taught them as well. And he used to go all over Suffolk and Essex and different bits of the country, shearing thousands of sheep, sort of thing, with these gang of lads. And I think at the time he told me he was charging 2 and 6, the old half a crown per ewe, you know, to shear them. And he made enough money, he told me, he made enough money in the end that he could shear for about 6 weeks, and then he could live on the money he made for the rest of the year. And he rented a lot of land in the end. He rented Ickworth Park, a huge acreage of parkland there, and he started, you know, keeping sheep on his own. And the family, you know, his family is still keeping, I think, sheep on Ickworth Park now. But the tale about Richard was he was shepherd when we were lads, at before he was married, and at Chadacre. And if you sheep duty at Chadacre, you were allowed to use a Welsh pony to ride round the sheep, because you had to be there, you know, different times in the night and all sorts of things. So, you know, while you were doing sheep duty, you had the use of this Welsh pony. And I'd got it on this particular Sunday, and I was, you know, going around the sheep, feeding them and doing different things. And Richard wanted to go somewhere, and he said, I'm going to take that pony, and I'm just going so-and-so. And Richard was, you know, quite a character, and you couldn't tell him anything much. You know, he sort of... Anyway, he jumped on this little Welsh pony, and the girth wasn't tight enough. Because, you know, a little Welsh pony is little devils. They will puff themselves out. You know, and so the girth is not too tight. Yeah. Anyway, he just jumped like anything on this little Welsh pony. And he'd give it a slap, and of course he belted off, and I'm watching him, and as I'm watching him, the saddle starts sliding round, and going round slowly down. Richard's shouting like mad, this thing to stop. And of course that was upset, I suppose, and eventually, of course, he fell off, I think. But teach you a lesson to make sure that the girth is tight before you.
They can
do little devils. Yeah, they learn how to, you know, just to hold themselves. Then it's not too tight for them.
What sort of method was that of shearing sheep? What did you call that?
Bowen. Bowen. I think his name was. But yeah. he really had a different method altogether to what we used to use originally.
Yeah.
I think he came over. It would again have been, I don't know, sometime in the 1950s, and he, you know, he was so good at, he could do, you know, he could shear sheep in sort of, you know, I don't know what it was, very, you know, less than, very short time, much quicker than anybody could do them normally.
So it'd be used now, do you reckon, more?
I think lots of people have used it or had slightly adapted it, but it's a different way of keeping the sheep tight all the time, the skin tight, so you didn't, you know, didn't nick them.
Yes, yeah.
And,
yes.
I've forgotten how many. I think in the end, Richard told me he used to do something like 8,000 to 12,000 or more sheep, you know, in that short season.
Two and six a time. A lot of money.
It was a lot of money, you know, and he said he could do that. I think it was only about 6 week period, you know, shearing. It's not a very long period, And then, you know, it was how he got on his own. Well, then Richard made four programmes for the BBC, which had been shown, the brilliant programmes, and they were spring, summer, autumn and winter.
Right.
And I mean, they were, I hope one day they will show those again, because he was a real character.
And are they black and white? Do you know?
No, I think they were colour. You know, because they really show how he made his living.
Yes.
You know, in the winter time he was selling logs. You know, he's cutting logs up and selling logs, and you know, the different, they were filming him all the time in the, you know, lambing and shearing and doing all the different jobs. They were brilliant programs, but spring, summer, autumn, and winter, the four programs.
They repeat that one.
Might. I mean, they were shown. I suppose they were shown sometime in the 60s and 70s, but they must be there in the archive somewhere. I hope they show them again.
That's interesting.
So
that was sheep. But yeah, you really are quite an experience. So how do you get your living rest of your life? What have you been doing? You know, have you been farming or just?
Yeah, well, I'm from as soon as I came out of the army, after my 2 years in the army, I mean, there's no farming in my background or whatsoever. I didn't really know what to do, and one of my uncles had a milk round. And so I went and just done a milk round with him, just delivering milk round Brantham and East Burgle and all round that area, East End of Burgle.
And how was that milk delivered? In bottles?
That was delivered in bottles from Drury Dairies at Colchester, and then we delivered all round. I mean, half a pint here. There was half pints in those days.
Yes.
You drive down a long track and you only saw half a pint. I was only there for a short time, and I got a job at Cable St Mary. On a 50-acre farm, but it had enormous greenhouses as well, and we grew 2,000 tomato plants indoors. You know, just purely tomatoes. We had a cucumber house as well, and the rest was apples and pears, and about, I don't know, 25, 30 acres of barley. That's all.
Yeah.
And so I was there for another couple of years, and I took part in a public speaking competition for young farmers, because I was in Young Farmers, and the competition was out near Beres Nimmons, and I got a letter some months later. Our particular club didn't win. We'd done fairly well, and I got a letter from a big farming company at out near Stowe Market, David Black and Sons, and they just bought another farm up in the northwest of the county, which is Lake and Heath area, and a derelict, totally derelict farm. And he just wrote me this letter and said he was looking for a foreman. If I was interested, would I ring him? And I think it was something I'd said in the Young Farmers competition that had sort of perhaps drawn attention. Yes. So I rang, and I wasn't married. I was 22, I think, 22 or 23, something like that. And I went and had a, with Mr. Black, I had a look at this farm, and there was 297 acres, and it was absolutely derelict. Thistles and nettles and twitch grass everywhere. And I remember him driving around the farm, and he said to me, "Well, what do you think about it, boy?" And I just said, "Well, Mr. Black, whatever I do, I can't make it any worse, can I?" And he said, "When can you start?" And I went and I worked for him for 3 years, and with his experience, because he's a very good farmer, with his experience and all the help and machinery they'd got, we really did turn the farm around in about 3 years. And then I was offered a job.
How were the greenhouses heated? Were that a solid fuel sort of boiler, coal boiler?
No, they were solid fuel boilers.
With big water pipes going round?
Yeah. Big old, what's the name point? Yeah. But we've moved on from there. We're now at Lake and Heath. We've gone from Cape St Mary, I was only there for a short time.
Right.
We've gone to Lake and Heath, so it's black sand. It's almost fenland.
Yeah.
So we're, totally different from anything that they were farming at Stowe Market. So we grew carrots and sugar beet, and even grew a certain amount of narcissi bulbs.
We had
2 or 3 acres of narcissis. And
was that irrigated or not?
No, it's very dry.
It dries out quickly.
Well, it does, but you've got the dikes, and you can bring the water table up. The water table is only very close, So anyway, we went from 300 acres there. I moved to a large farm at Clopton and Haskett near Woodbridge, which was about 1,500 acres, and we were growing lots of crops for bird's eye. Still have gained lots and lots of pigs. Going to the bacon, Elmsall Bacon Factory in those days, all the pigs were. And I had a contract there while my boss's son went to college, because the boss's son was 16, I think, when I went to work for him. And I stayed 6 years with Mr. Taylor there, until Richard really had come back from college, and he'd been to America and had his year out and all sorts of things. And it wouldn't have been fair if I'd have stayed, I don't think, because Richard had come home and I was doing the job probably that he ought to be doing.
It's quite a common story that farmer's son takes over the farm, doesn't it?
But I mean, Mr. Taylor had offered me a piece of land to build my house on, and he wanted me to stay, really, and we had a wonderful relationship with them. But I didn't feel it was right, and I then moved to manage 500 acres at just outside Ongar. It belonged to Blake Hall, which is an old, really old established estate. So I was there for the next 18 years.
Right.
Started with a herd of Jersey cows, which didn't make any money at all. Lost money.
Why was that? Because they had very rich milk, isn't it?
Very rich milk, but they didn't give much of it. Some didn't give any at all.
Right.
The bull calves were worth nothing. Jersey bull calf was not worth... Well, in those days, when I was there, you couldn't get 10 shillings for it.
There's no meat on it.
No, well, and the fat, if you fatten up a Jersey, the fat is yellow. It's a yellowy fat sort of thing. It's not... They were only used for veal, I think, the bull calves. Of course, veal wasn't very popular in this country, So you just got 10 shillings for a bull calf, which was nothing really. When you think a Friesian was making 15, 18 quid or more, same period, a lot more. So I did eventually, I took a lot of doing, but I did eventually, talk my employers into moving from jerseys, getting rid of all the jerseys, and changing to Frisians. And we changed in the very dry summer of 75, 76. We had a drought, really. We sold all, virtually all the jerseys went to Somerset, where the fat levels were so low that they needed one or two Jersey cows in the herds to get the fat content up.
Yes.
You know, the butter fat was so low in those high yielding herds down there, where it's all on grass, summer grazing and whatnot. So that we got rid of the jerseys, made quite good money. They all went down to Somerset, lorry loads of them, young stock as well.
Yeah.
And we had one summer with nothing, so no stock at all. So we made lots of silage. And then in 76, which again was another very dry year, the people of Frisians were desperate. They were virtually giving away young stock because they'd got no food with two dry summers.
Yeah.
And we went down to Hampshire, we went up to Norfolk, you know, and we could buy beautiful dam calf and heifers for around about £80 each.
Right.
You know, I mean, so we built a really good herd of Frisians. Because we could have the pick. I mean, I could walk into a field with 70 or 80 young stock, and I could pick out the ones I wanted, because they just hadn't got enough food. They got just about enough food to keep the cows going, but they couldn't keep the young stock going. It was a wonderful time to change from our point of view. But we did feel, I almost felt guilty, really, of offering so little. I mean, the prices were so low for that stock, but we, you know, and then within a couple of years, that, you know,
come back, yes, you know. Sure. What sort of milking parlour did you have? Was it herringbone?
We had a herringbone, with a, you know, what's name, pit.
Yes.
You know, pit down.
Yes,
yeah.
So how many head did you have in the end?
120.
Did you?
120
really?
Cows. And I mean, what was perhaps interesting, really, was that Riddle College was using the farm at Ongar. For their students, really, they used to come out quite regularly with them, bring a busload of them. They, the two particular things they were interested in was the way we were growing potatoes, and also what we were doing with the cows, because they'd seen it change from the jerseys. You know, they were coming out regularly to look and see really what the changes we made, and of course they're putting in. Originally, the old jerseys were milked on a pipeline right round a long shed. Which was a very inefficient way, you know, bring the cows in, tied up with a neck and, you know, fed in. It was dreadful when we look back. And then that, you know, with putting the herringbone in, one man could milk, sort of thing, and it was a different system altogether.
Yeah,
And making silage, where before they'd never made silage, they'd made hay. You know, making silage had made a tremendous difference.
Carries you through the winter, doesn't it?
Also you get more milk out of, you know, you get more milk out of silage than you do out of hay, really, I think, because it's a moist food rather than a dry food.
Yes, already moist, isn't it?
You know, they can eat more of it. And,
Because Whistler's got rid of all the dairy now.
Yes,
know,
yeah.
Thing
yeah,
there. It's just purely gardening. It's a gardening
college
really.
Now.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, at the time they were. You know, they had their own herd. They had pigs.
Yes,
they had pigs and all sorts. Yeah, they had the apples and they cloth. Yeah.
How are you getting on with your list?
Well,
you
I'm sort of yeah. I mean, I'm
that's
come.
Good. That's
I mean,
good.
I've come almost to the end of my farming time, because I was made redundant in 1987. Really, from a. You know, a vast difference of opinion between myself and my employer, sort of thing. I bought a van and I went and worked for myself.
Yeah.
I used all the experience that I'd had, really, from farming and all sorts. I'd always been interested in trees, and so I bought this old van for £600. I paid another £100 to have it sign written nicely, and I set to work with just a few hand tools. And I went doing gardening and pruning and anything. I went working in the cattle market at Chelmsford for 2 days a week, Mondays and Fridays, when the cattle market was on.
Yes, yeah.
I went driving combines for two different farms. I would, you know, do relief tractor driving, and certainly I've been combine driving virtually all ever since. Well, I drove the first combine in 1953.
Was that one of those combines that we came over in boxes? They came over.
I don't know. It was a Massey.
Massey Harris.
Massey Harris. Yeah,
yeah, they were. Big they red were, combine.
Yeah, they were two. On the when I went to work on the 3,000 acres in Yorkshire, they had three combines because a lot of barley on the Yorkshire. It was on the Yorkshire Wolds, most of it. An awful lot of barley, and we had three. I mean, you know, they had three combines there. Two with the old petrol paraffin engines, the old Austin engines, and the first diesel one, the first diesel Massey that we had one of those.
Because they were rationed, weren't they? Combine harvesters were rationed by the government, originally. Only so many farms could have
them.
And when they came, I know they came in big. Big boxes assembled on the farm by farm workers like yourself.
Yeah, we didn't, I mean, these were already there when I got there. But, but I do remember being, I thought it was wonderful to be able to be allowed just for a few minutes to drive a Massey combine, because most of the time we were picking the sacks up, because that was all sacked up.
Yes.
You know, into 16 stone sacks sort of thing. But, and I'm, anyway, with the experiences I had, I went to work just for myself, and then within a very short time I had so much work I had to employ one young chap, and within 2 years of working for myself I had, you know, four other blokes working for me, and that's the reason I'm living here where I am now.
Good for you. Looking back briefly, just to finish, with the, you had experience with horses, the hard work, didn't you?
Just
try and give me a picture of when horses were on the field and the tractors came in, when you were on the farm. It must have been really hard work with the horses. And when the hydraulic tractors came in, it must have made life easier for you, surely.
Different altogether, wouldn't it? Because,
you know,
I mean, just even, you know, even the simplest jobs with the horse, you've still got an awful lot of manual work. You know, when we went horse hoeing, the four-row horse house, you had to lift it up at the end, because it had two iron wheels on it.
Yeah.
You know, you had to lift up at the end, so when you turned round at the end, you didn't cut all the headland up. Yeah. You know, you turned round and then you lifted it up again and dropped it down to work. Everything was...
It was hard work. Manual work.
Yeah. I mean, you had everybody was expected to have their own tools. You know, you had your own muck fork. You know, you had your own muck fork, you had your own sugar beet top and iron. You know, all those sort of tools that you use regular. You know, you brought your own tied underneath your crossbar on your bike when you went to work or in the, you know. I mean, they supplied other tools, but
you had your own tools.
Yeah, and like your bag and iron for cleaning out the ditches, and, you know, you had a slasher, a bag and iron, all those sort of things. But you looked after them. You sharpened them.
Yes,
you were really. It's part of your pride, I suppose.
Pride in the job.
Having your own jobs.
So it's quite a thing. Did you ever get involved with superstition? Because there's a lot of superstition in farming anyway.
Yeah.
But with horses, that was something just the head horseman would do, wouldn't it? Really.
Yes, I think so.
The drugs they gave the horses.
They used to. You know, they used to. Give them a bit of extra oats if they wanted a bit of extra work.
Extra power.
If they wanted to work them a bit harder, they got, you know, a bit of rolled oats and, you know, not and less chaff sort of thing, because they used to mix, a bit of chaff with the, you know, with the thing with them. And
All right, Alan. Well, look, that was Alan Adcock from Ford End. Thank you very much, Alan.
It's all right.
I do appreciate that. What I'll do now, with your permission, I'll just fill in this letter, just thanking you for the interview, and hopefully later on in the summer, towards the autumn, we might have an open day, and we'll write to you and invite you along to see what we've got.
Lovely.